Welcome, I'm Rose Aguilar, and this is Your Call. In the 1980s, the Brazilian government had its first contact with the indigenous Ururaowawao people. From a population of thousands, fewer than 200 remain today. Their territory is now an island of rainforest surrounded by farms. They're protecting 6,000 square miles of their lands and the rainforest from land grabbers, invaders, and corporations. Things have just gotten worse under Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro, who promised to open the Amazon to even more development. When he ran for president, he said, "Where there is indigenous land, there is wealth underneath it." In the new documentary, The Territory, we meet Biteta, a young indigenous leader who teaches his people how to use drones, GPS devices, and other technology to document what's happening. He says his elders also fought to protect their land, but no one believed what was happening because they didn't have the technology to record it. GPS devices show that invaders are in indigenous territory, and cameras show the media the fires that were started by land grabbers. But Biteta says they cannot do this work alone. And that is why he and the Ururaowawao people agreed to work with today's guest, Alex Pritz, and his team on this film, because they want the world to see what's happening. Joining us is Alex Pritz, director, cinematographer, and co-editor of The Territory. You can find information at yourcallradio.org. Thank you so much for joining us, Alex. This film is incredible.
Alex, can you begin by first telling us when you first learned about what was happening in the Amazon? Because I think what makes this film so special is that you hear about the Amazon, you read about what's going on there, but to have such a close perspective just changes the way you think about the Amazon and changes the experience overall. So just tell us a little bit about when you first learned about what was happening in the Amazon.
You know, I studied environmental science and conservation, and so I'd been reading about the situation in the Amazon and the forest loss that was happening there for a long time. But my interest in a film on this region and this crisis really began in 2018 during the elections that were happening in Brazil. And you know, we'd seen what had happened in the United States with the elections here and what, you know, the previous president meant for protected areas for marginalized groups of people. And the rhetoric that was coming from Bolsonaro was really troubling. And I began reaching out to some people whose work I found really inspiring, who were working to defend the rainforest. And, you know, through those discussions, began to understand just how much their lives would change if Bolsonaro was elected and what types of challenges would be coming down the pipeline towards them, and decided that, you know, this was something we really wanted to accompany and follow.
The footage is stunning. I mean, it's absolutely incredible. How did you and your team get such close access?
It was really a relationship that was born of, you know, personal connection between some of our producers, protagonists, and ourselves. And I can't pretend that it was all easy all the time. You know, it was, I'm American. I'm a white man from New York, and this community, the indigenous community in particular, had, you know, suffered and had so much extracted from it at the hands of people that look and behave culturally like me. And so there was a lot of skepticism of the film and what it would mean and whether anything would actually change for this community based on their participation or non-participation in a film like this. And, you know, it was a long, slow, but really important consensus-based process that we went through to explain ourselves, our process, how films are made, what it means to participate in one, what the editing process looks like, what it feels like. And through those conversations, I think built a common understanding of what this project could accomplish, but also what it would feel like on a day-to-day basis. You know, we're following you around for hours at a time, days at a time, weeks at a time. And, you know, through that, I think built a lot of trust in ways that you know, just take time.
Right. I mean, and in addition to the indigenous people, you also were able to film a settlers, a farm worker, I mean, people who were trying to take the land. And it seemed to me that you all also in some ways put your lives on the line because so much is at stake here. So how were you able to also get access to people who were trying to take this land?
Yeah, I mean, we had to have two different approaches for these different communities that are really in direct conflict. You know, this is, for the people living there on the front lines, an active conflict, almost a war. And so the impetus and the motivation to reach out to these farmers' networks that are illegally invading protected indigenous land came from the Uruwau indigenous community and some of the activists that we were filming with themselves, who said, we've had filmmakers and journalists come down and we take them around to the deforestation sites and they interview us. And, you know, they spend 2 weeks and it takes up a lot of our time, actually. It's, you know, it's a bit of a chaperoning mission to accompany these journalists. And nothing has changed for us in decades of working with the media like this. So if we're going to do this and we're going to do it together, we want you to exercise the privilege that you have, you know, by virtue of being an outsider, and go talk to these people who will talk. They pioneers cast of this same virtuous mission that the American West was colonized. And so through that, you know, began conversations with these farmers who likewise are very skeptical of the media, very closed and guarded and can be violent. But through, again, time spent on the ground with these people, I think we're able to demonstrate to them that our film was not going to vilify them in the way that other reporting had. You know, mm-hmm. we're not going to shy away from the fact that what they're doing is illegal and is violent and destructive. But, you know, like a lot of poor and marginalized people, there are larger forces at play here. And, you know, in many ways, we as consumers of these products that these farmers are creating are as culpable and as responsible for this destruction as the individuals doing the dirty work themselves.
Right, exactly. And we'll talk about that later in the show. So for a little bit of context, can you just talk a little bit about the Amazon and its importance to the planet, to the people? And then also just a couple of facts. Deforestation in the Amazon is at its highest rate in over 15 years. So can you just first talk about the importance of the Amazon, even to those of us who will probably never visit and live very far away?
Yeah, it is a marvelous ecosystem. And, you know, globally so important for buffering the effects of climate change. You know, 20% of the world's oxygen is filtered by the trees of the Amazon rainforest. It's a huge carbon sink for the planet, and it's nearing a tipping point that's really dangerous. If more than 20 to 25% of the rainforest is cut down, it can enter this new cycle of desertification where it fragments and begins to lose a lot of the power that it has. Right now, I think we're at about 18% deforestation. So we're getting really close. And one of the most remarkable things about the rainforest is the fact that indigenous communities are by far the best protectors of this land. When you look at these satellite maps of the Amazon, it's so clear, even without the political boundaries drawn, what is indigenous land and what is not, because everything that is private property that's been left to the devices of individual citizens has been razed, absolutely deforested for soy and cattle ranching. And the land that is under indigenous guardianship and stewardship is old growth rainforest. It's extremely clear. And, you know, I think that's a trend that should be made note of globally, that indigenous communities represent less than 5% of the global population and are guardians over land that contains over 80% of terrestrial biodiversity. So any conversations we have about climate change and this crisis we're all facing, I think, need to include indigenous people and indigenous voices at the center of those discussions.
Exactly. It's such an important point. And we did a show recently that looked at data, you know, indigenous activists saving almost 1 billion tons of carbon per year. And again, this is kind of difficult to visualize in your mind. And that's why I think this film is just so important, because the indigenous people that we meet in the film talk about this, that we are here saving this land. And it's not just for us, it's for the world.
Yeah. You know, they're the work of Bitete, you know, the protagonist of our film. He starts out as an 18-year-old, you know, really a kid. He likes to play and flirt with girls. And, you know, by the end of the film, he is this really self-assured, confident, compassionate leader that's capable of carrying his community forwards. But the work that he's doing is not just for himself. And it's almost, you know, it is unfair that he has this massive weight of responsibility on him, because his community is 183 people, and the territory that they are defending of old growth rainforest is 6,000 square miles. Wow. So, you know, triple the size of the state of Delaware. Mm. It's a huge, huge area of rainforest. And as you're saying, technology and some of these tools like drones and cameras have become really instrumental in extending his community's ability to defend a larger area of rainforest than they can even physically patrol on foot. Mm-hmm.
Today, we're joined by Alex Pritz, director, cinematographer, and co-editor of The Territory. It's an incredible documentary that's focusing on indigenous efforts to fend off illegal land grabs in the Amazon. Well, so let's talk about the indigenous people that we meet in this film. As we learn, in the 1980s, the Brazilian government first contacted I want to be sure I try to say this right, Uru-Eo-Wau-Wau people. So that was the first time they had contact was in the 80s?
Yeah. So prior to that, you know, people had been coming north into the Brazilian Amazon for a long time, beginning with, you know, the Portuguese and then subsequently rubber tappers and later cattle ranchers. And originally the Brazilian government had a policy of, you know, going out and attempting to contact some of these isolated groups that had been living, you know, as nomadic hunter-gatherers. And the Uruguay were part of that campaign by the government to go out and forcibly contact some of these groups. And when that happened, it was really disastrous for the Uruguay. In particular, more than half of their population died within 2 years of that first contact in 1981, both from, you know, violent encounters and death and disease that came from tuberculosis and measles. And so the memory of that atrocity lingers large in the elders' minds, especially Bitete's grandfather, who grew up, you know, isolated from the rest of Brazilian society and only recently, you know, became part of the rest of the state in this way. So Bitete, as well as this 18-year-old kid, represents this huge, you know, leap in terms of and not leap in a forward-looking sense, you know, not as if this is a progression or anything else, but that he is part of multiple worlds at the same time and multiple cosmologies. And he's able to move between them quite effortlessly, which I think is what makes him such a wonderful leader.
And in the film, Bitete said, "The only thing saving our planet is our rainforest. The Amazon is the heart of the world." And today we are speaking with Alex Pritz, director, cinematographer, and co-editor of the documentary, The Territory. Find information at yourcallradio.org. Tell us more about Bitete. I mean, the other question is, I guess you in some ways got lucky, because the indigenous people that you interviewed, as you said, look, journalists come here, we have to hold their hand, and they leave and nothing happens. So if you're going to do this, we are going to be involved also. And what an amazing opportunity. But to really gain the trust of people. And as you say, I mean, you see personal moments, you follow them around. I mean, it's really, you really got incredible access. And also, I have to tell you, Alex, I was looking them up last night and I found Bitete's Twitter feed. And I thought, oh my gosh, now I can follow him on Twitter. I mean, we live in such a wild time where some people are on social media and you can follow them. And I feel like I have this window into these people that I just didn't really know anything about before I watched your film.
Yeah, I think that's such a wonderful part of this story in particular, is that the film isn't the end of this chapter at all. Mm-hmm. It's really a launch pad for Bitete and the Uruwau media team, who are also co-producers of the film. My co-cinematographer on the film is Tangai Uruwau, who comes from that community. And so in many ways, I hope that this film is the beginning of Bitete's career. Just recently, he was invited to COP26, both as an Indigenous leader, but also as a reporter, working for the largest Indigenous media organization in Brazil and creating a podcast on the climate negotiations there. So, you know, we also have an impact campaign that's helping to build a multimedia production center in their territory to continue to support these types of stories being told by Indigenous storytellers themselves. So we're really excited about that same thing, and that you can, and the rest of the audience can follow Bitete and their journey through this. We're just so excited for everything that's to come for them.
It was also striking just to watch how the technology is used. And Bitete said, our elders went through all of this, but no one believed them because they didn't have the technology to record this and to document it. And now they do. And I mean, you have, I don't want to give that much away in the film because it is so good, but you have this one scene where they're defending their land and they're filming everything. And so the media, of course, the media love this kind of thing, and they got so much media attention. At one point, they were even tracking GPS points to show that, yes, we are in Indigenous land and you are on our land. You're in our territory. And so it was really interesting to watch the young people with the technology and then watch how the elders responded.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's such a powerful tool for this younger generation, especially. I mean, this community has been sounding the alarm about environmental destruction and the violence that their community faces for generations now. But because of this Western evidence-based framework that the legal system in Brazil relies on, and you know, that the authorities rely on to investigate or not investigate, having cold hard proof, you know, a drone image that has metadata of the coordinates where some deforestation is happening, is sort of a game changer for them. But in the end, it is really just the technology itself is a tool for helping to get their message out, which is really about respect for the natural world. And, you know, I think the at the core, it's this clash between these settlers who view the land as private property. They view it as a commodity that can be bought and sold and, you know, trashed if they want to because they own it. And Bitete and his community, who think that, you know, we're born with a duty to protect the land and a responsibility towards it. And we've been given so much by this planet. You know, we should spend a major portion of our lives figuring out how to protect and defend it. And so the technology is really helpful, but I think it's also, it's a conduit to getting that core message out to the rest of the world.
Right. And that's the other thing I was thinking is how does this change these people? How does it change the way they interact with each other, the way they interact with the world? Because obviously you want people to have access to what they want access to. But at the same time, you just wonder, and I guess it's such a Western way to think about this. Like, well, these people should just be left alone. But, you know, who are we to say that? I just had so many thoughts about this. What happens when you introduce technology to people who have not had access to it? And we're the ones that are sitting here on screens 8 hours a day, disconnected from land. And they're the ones that are just interacting with land in a way that some people only dream about.
Yeah. These are things, you know, we thought about constantly and had to have conversations with the community about constantly during the making of this film. They got internet about halfway through production. And so a lot of what became possible for us as a film in terms of communication and participatory filmmaking really only became possible in the second half of shooting the film. And, you know, we've seen how quickly that changes everything. But it's also, I think, important to note that, you know, the right wing in Brazil and Bolsonaro and people like that love to erase Indigenous identity by using terms like, if you could see me right now, I'm on the radio, but I'm doing air quotes. He'll call people iPhone Indigenous, meaning that, you know, if you have an iPhone, how could you possibly be Indigenous? Because Indigenous people should be in the forest, you know? And what he means by that is not that, you know, they shouldn't have an iPhone or whatever. It's that you shouldn't participate in civic life. You shouldn't be political. You should remain, you know, conveniently separated from everything we are trying to paternalistically decide about your land and your people. And, you know, Bitete really rejects that. And I think it's a really brave thing. He says, you know, no, we are going to raise our voices. We're going to get these cameras and we're going to use the tools of your own system against you in some ways. So yeah, I mean, it's a really tricky thing. You know, and our role as filmmakers in, you know, supporting this use of technology and cameras and helping work with the community to use these tools in new ways. You know, we chose to have a relatively active role in that ourselves. And that was a decision that came with much deliberation.
Well, and also Bitete even said, photography is helping me be a leader. It's allowing me to express myself. We have our own way of seeing things. We have such deep knowledge, and that is what's missing from the photographs. And I thought that was such a beautiful way to put it.
Yeah. And I hope, you know, it's a bit of a nod to myself as a white outside filmmaker too. There are things that I missed for sure in the way that I was choosing to frame or, you know, shoot different parts of the story. And I think the film really opens up creatively when we move into the hands and the camera and the lens of Tangai Uruwa, my co-cinematographer, and we begin to see how he documents his own people and what types of relationships are caught on camera then, you know, moments that I never would have been privy to myself of, you know, really raw honesty. And so I hope, you know, that the film can also offer a bit of a statement about who it is that's capturing these events. And, you know, I open myself up to that conversation as well as an outsider.
We're speaking today with Alex Pritz, director, cinematographer, and co-editor of The Territory, an incredible documentary that explores Indigenous efforts to fend off illegal land grabs in the Amazon following the election of Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro. This is Your Call. We'll be back after this. This is Your Call. I'm Rose Aguilar. Today, we're joined by Alex Pritz, director, cinematographer, and co-editor of The Territory. It's an incredible documentary that's focusing on Indigenous efforts to fend off illegal land grabs in the Amazon. I read that it screened at Sundance. Congratulations, you and your team. You got rave reviews. And then National Geographic decided to buy the film, which again is incredible because hopefully that means it'll get even wider distribution. So how else can people see the film?
Yeah, we have been so lucky to have been picked up by National Geographic, who are wonderful partners and are going to make the film available all over in theaters early fall across the United States. And then it'll be on Disney Plus later this year.
Great.
Later in the fall.
Wow. So this is actually going to be seen by a lot of people.
Yeah, that's the goal. Yeah.
That is, that's fantastic. I just, and also just to, for this to be seen outside of environmental circles, right? So someone who might be watching a Disney movie will stumble upon this, who might never have seen something, a film like this, or maybe doesn't really know much about this issue.
Yeah. I hope that, you know, people can walk into this, you know, not thinking of it as a climate change film, because I don't even know that we say the words climate change once in the film. It's really a human story about the fight to protect home and, you know, bravery. It's a coming of age story for Bitete, this 18-year-old kid who goes through a massive transformation. So yeah, we're excited to reach as many people as we possibly can.
Yes, and it's fantastic. And maybe we'll have you on again in the fall when it gets wider distribution. You know, you brought up the Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro before the break. And just to remind people about his platform, it really was incredible to watch Bitete and the others watching Bolsonaro as he was campaigning I believe they were on their phones watching this. And he said, there will not be one more inch of indigenous reserves. So can you just remind us the message that Bolsonaro sent about indigenous people and the Amazon?
Yeah, Bolsonaro's rhetoric was extremely clear that he considered indigenous people to have too much land, that they needed to redraw the lines of what is indigenous territory and what is not. And he believes that the Brazilian state has the right to expand mining, logging, all of these extractive industries, not only in indigenous land, but all protected territories in the Amazon. Yeah.
And we see people were shocked when he won the election with a significant lead. Can you also tell us, what does the law say in Brazil about indigenous land? Because, gosh, in this country, there's the land back movement. But in a place like Brazil, there are very clear lines. What is indigenous land? I mean, we mentioned that when the Uru-Eo-Wawa people were out protecting their land with the GPS device saying, you are clearly on indigenous land and this is protected.
Yeah, on paper, Brazil has quite a progressive set of environmental laws. The country got a new constitution after a military dictatorship in 1988. And in that constitution, indigenous land is federally protected. Any demarcated indigenous land, and 13% of Brazil is indigenous territory. So quite a, you know, not insignificant amount of land. And especially when you're looking at the Brazilian Amazon, it's a much bigger percentage. The problem really comes down to enforcement of these laws that on paper seem quite good. You know, Bolsonaro has gone about gutting the budgets for any environmental protection agencies. He's taken the power to demarcate indigenous land and given it to the agribusiness lobby. And there are a couple of really important cases right now. One that's headed to the Brazilian Supreme Court, which is called Marco Temporal, which is about the power to decide what is and is not indigenous land. And this, if passed, could essentially open up the country to redrawing the lines for, you know, any indigenous land across the country. And so he's really working as hard as he can to undermine the laws that exist on paper, while also reducing these agencies' ability to enact any sort of monitoring or patrol or defense of the land.
Today, we're joined by Alex Pritz, director, cinematographer, and co-editor of The Territory. It's an incredible documentary that's focusing on indigenous efforts to fend off illegal land grabs in the Amazon. Can you tell us a little bit more about the industries that are involved in deforestation? I mean, you have, gosh, the footage is just incredible. I mean, the beautiful forest, the lush forest, and then to see the trees coming down, to see fire in the Amazon, and then also incredible footage of just cattle, so much cattle on these lands. So what about the big business? Can you first tell us about that?
Yeah, it's a really clear process that happens in Brazil. And I think, you know, a lot of people hear of these fires, the wildfires in Australia or the wildfires in California, which, you know, I'm sure these listeners are very familiar with. What's happening in Brazil is not a wildfire in the same way. You know, the world's attention was on Sao Paulo in 2019 when the skies went dark because of the smoke coming from the Amazon. Those were not rampant wildfires. Those were intentionally set fires by small-scale agriculturalists to clear new land. So you'll have these poor and marginalized farmers who go in as the tip of the spear and colonize new land, build a church, a school, 25 houses, and begin clearing land left and right. Wait for those trees to dry after they've been felled, and then begin burning it. And once it's burned, it's, you know, quite hard for the rainforest to reclaim that land. And so that's the first step. Those people will begin growing cassava, bananas, and food for their families. Eventually, within a few years, they'll sell that land back or begin leasing it to somebody who will bring in cattle and turn that land into pasture. Once the topsoil has lost most of its nutritive value, and you need to begin adding too many fertilizers to it, you'll turn it into pasture land and bring in cows. Then at some point, once it gets, aggregated large enough, enough small parcels bound together, you can turn it into a soy plantation. And the soy is mostly actually for feed for those same cattle who go to these cattle feed lots and get plumped up with a bunch of soy feed, and those cattle get sent overseas. The film itself follows these small farmers that are doing the dirty work of going out and colonizing new land. A lot of them are landless themselves. They don't own anything of their own. And they see this as their only way to break into the Brazilian middle class. But behind them is a large industry and huge apparatus of financiers and large landowners, ranchers, who are incentivizing and encouraging these people to go out and colonize new lands that then get sold back to them.
In the documentary, The Territory, we meet Martin, a settler who said, we're considered criminals. They act like we're hurting the country. And we see footage of Martin and just a handful of others cutting down trees. And as you say, intentionally burning the forests to clear the area. And it was really incredible because you don't need that many people to cause a lot of destruction. And I guess I just didn't know that before this film. What was it like for you all to be there, to see that and to film that?
That was a really difficult scene to film. I didn't realize that they were going to be burning that day. They went out with motorcycles and chainsaws. And then midway through the day, somebody starts running with this burning branch down the trail towards me. And you're in the middle of nowhere. I mean, there's no cell reception. There's nobody to call. And, if you've seen the film, you know that even when you do call the authorities, as some of our characters do, they'll question whether this is real. They'll drag their feet, and there's no response. And at the same time as we were filming this, Bolsonaro had been going in the news and saying that, actually he thought that maybe the NGOs were the ones setting fire to the rainforest in order to get more funding from overseas. And so we thought, wow, this is, potentially a really important scene to demonstrate with real proof that there are people out there doing this and, show just what it looks like.
There was also a pretty heavy religious element to all of this. Sergio, a farm worker, who said, "I spent my life working on someone else's land and I want to own my own land one day." He said that people call this the promised land.
Yeah, there's the parallels between the American national mythology and the pioneering spirit of these Brazilians is quite strong. There's a lot. When Sergio and Martins moved to the Amazon, they were incentivized to do so. Their parents were encouraged by the Brazilian government. There was a program akin to the American 40 acres and a mule policy, where if you could clear enough rainforest, you could own it because you were creating private property and creating wealth for the Brazilian economy. And so within Sergio and Martin's lifetime, that has really shifted dramatically to the point where it's now criminal activity and they're persecuted for it. And they see that as a major injustice against them, that what was once valorized and considered this heroic pioneering activity is now something that's really frowned upon. And so to them, they are the heroes of this story. And you can see it in the film visually, that the iconography of these cowboy hats and Texas paraphernalia. And that really mirrors the ideological admiration that these people have for manifest destiny and the animating principles of American westward expansion and the violence and destruction that came with that.
Yeah, I remember that was so interesting that one of them did have a hat on that said Texas. And I thought, is that purposeful or do they know? It was just really interesting to see that.
Yeah, this is maybe too much of a tangent, but I'll do it anyways. Sergio's family comes from a small town in the south of Brazil called Americanas, which still flies the Confederate flag to this day. It was a town that was founded when the South lost the Civil War in the United States, and large landowners, slave holders in the American South were looking for another country that still had legal slavery and similar agricultural conditions. And so they founded this small colony that they called Americanas, brought the Confederate flag down there. And Sergio, you know, I don't know if he's directly descended from those people. I think he's probably got more European immigrant ancestry. But, you know, I think that to me just demonstrates how closely similar these two colonial projects between America and Brazil are in their, wow, their links.
Wow, that is so fascinating. And then just to add one more thing, Martin cited the Bible saying people are meant to take the land and multiply. And it, I mean, what's amazing about it is when you see the smoke from these intentional fires, you just wonder, are the Uru Iowawa people nearby? Do they see the smoke? And then how are they going to respond to this?
Yeah. You know, the smoke inhalation is a big problem, especially for the elders in the community, that the smoke is very real. It's hard to even see very far sometimes in the middle of the summer. The burning season is cyclical. So July, August, and September are the heaviest burning months. And the sky is completely different. The sun looks completely different. And it's a really big problem for them. Even coming into and out of their territory, they have to drive through some of these invader settlements where they're driving through burning fires to get in and out of their village if they need to go into town. So they're in a really vulnerable position, especially this coming summer.
Today, we are speaking with Alex Pritz, director, cinematographer, and co-editor of the documentary, The Territory. It explores and just highlights indigenous efforts to fend off illegal land grabs in the Amazon following the election of Brazilian President Jair Bolsonaro. As Alex said, because National Geographic acquired the film, it'll screen in the early fall across the United States, and then later in the year, it will be on Disney Plus. Again, I don't want to give much out, more details in the film, but I just want to talk about the danger involved in this kind of work. Talking about the indigenous people, and then you can also tell us about the incredible environmental activist we meet in the film. Is it Nadina?
Nadina.
Nadina, yeah. Thank you. Incredible woman. I'm just reading from The Guardian here from a piece in March. Just in Colombia, 138 activists were killed. And then if you look at the numbers overall, 358 people who worked on land, environmental, and indigenous rights were killed. You know, these are land defenders. And so this work is very, very dangerous. And Nadina really talks about that because she, there's so much. I mean, thinking that possibly a family member may have been kidnapped, she gets death threats on a regular basis. So can you just talk about, especially under someone like a Bolsonaro, how difficult this work really is?
This work is absolutely a life and death struggle. You know, Nadina faces death threats constantly for her work. Her daughter Chai has recently become an activist in her own right, spoke at COP26, gave an address to world leaders, and within minutes after her address was receiving death threats directly to her phone. Yeah, it's really, really difficult work. And especially for the people that are living in these communities on the front lines, the Uruwau villages are surrounded basically on all sides by hostile neighbors who know them, know when they come in and out of the village, know what types of cars they drive. And so it's a really dire situation for the people on the ground.
Well, and also there's an incredible scene about, you know, how to respond to people trying to steal the land. And they basically say Bolsonaro is on their side. So at that point, what do we do? And then there's just sort of a moment of silence.
Yeah, I mean, he has enabled and emboldened all of the worst elements of these violent fringe networks. And it's really a network. It's an organized operation, these land theft groups. And the way that he speaks, the way that he finances his government, the people that he's put in charge of these different agencies, all indicate to the people on the ground that they're not going to be held accountable, that they can operate with impunity, And I think that's part of the reason that we were able to get access to them, is that they felt that they were protected by the government in doing what they're doing, illegal as it may be.
It's so interesting to hear that Nadanya's daughter went on to become an activist, because in many scenes, she just expresses utter fear for her mother. And it's in some ways, it's almost like she wanted her mom to stop doing this work, because she said, when you don't call home, we fear the worst.
Yeah, it's, you know, I think for them, it's growing up with Nadine as a mother, she's such a force of nature. Mm. She's got such a gravitational pull. I think, you know, of course, as a young child, you'd be very worried for your parent going out and placing themselves in harm's way like this. And Nadine really is fearless, sometimes to a fault. But as she's grown up, Chai has really stepped up and become a remarkable leader.
It was really amazing just to meet her and just to see how she works with Batate and everyone else. And then, it, like you say, call the police. What's the point? Because they don't come. Can you talk also about, now that we live in such this globalized society and the food system is globalized, people are connected to the Amazon without really knowing it.
Yeah, the Amazon provides products in ways that, you know, we don't even think about. There was a large report in the New York Times about leather for car seats and how that comes. It was actually directly linked to the town where Sergio lives. You know, the cattle ranching that happens there is coming from cattle that are often raised in protected and indigenous lands. There's a case right now that the Uruwau are involved in which they tracked, you know, they went out and laboriously tracked the license plates of different vehicles to prove that cattle coming from their indigenous land, illegally being raised there, is being sold in a supermarket called Casino in France. And so they've filed a lawsuit in France against this supermarket chain. And so I think it's, you know, eat less meat is an easy thing to say. We got to figure out how we're going to feed 10 billion people on this planet as well. But beef and beef products coming from the Amazon are very hard to regulate and are often coming at the cost of the rainforest and indigenous communities.
Today, we're joined by Alex Pritz, director, cinematographer, and co-editor of The Territory. It's an incredible documentary that's focusing on indigenous efforts to fend off illegal land grabs in the Amazon. I'm really glad you brought up the piece about the leather, because we wanted to do something on that, because we have done shows about JBS, the massive meat conglomerate based in Brazil. And just to let listeners know, the New York Times had this piece, it was November, an examination of Brazil's immense tannery industry shows how hides from illegally deforested ranches can easily reach the global marketplace in the United States. Much of the demand for Brazilian leather comes from automakers. And like you say, Alex, it's important to say eat less meat, but in the grand scheme of things, you know, individual actions are very important, but we need so much more than that. So what can people do to support the work of Batate and the others, people who are protecting this land?
Yeah, it's a great question. You know, I think first of all, it's important to say that Batate's work is really protecting us. And so I think there's this knee-jerk reaction on myself and a lot of people that watch the film and say, okay, how can I help them? You know, they're in this vulnerable position, which is true. Mm. But really, I think we should recognize first that what they're doing is helping all of us, right, in terms of the climate and our ability to live on this planet for generations to come. But beyond that, I think you mentioned the land back movement here in the United States. I think it's important for people here to recognize that this is not just a problem of this group over there in South America. It's a really similar set of problems that have been created here in the United States as well. And I would encourage people to look into the land back movement where they're from, and examine their own relationships with the land that they inhabit. But of course, beyond that, the Uruwau have a media team that they are building to continue telling their own stories from the territory. And they are actively accepting donations, as well as Nvinia's organization, Kenning Day, which supports a range of different indigenous groups across Rondônia, the state in Brazil. And I would encourage people to look into both of those as well.
Yeah, and it is such a good point about how they are the ones that are really doing the work for everyone else. It's such a good point. Are you still in touch with Bitete and Nadania? Are you keeping in touch with them and the work that they're doing on the ground?
Oh, yeah. they can't get away from me. I'll be with Bitete tomorrow
at
Seattle Film Festival. And I was just with Nadania last week. We'll be, our lives will be intertwined for some time to come.
Oh my gosh. So Bitete is actually going to some of these festivals. What has his experience been like after the filming of this documentary and then showing it to the world and then meeting people at these festivals? I mean, I don't want you to speak for him, but what has it been like, you know, experiencing this with him, I should say?
I don't think any of us anticipated this type of reaction to the film. It's been absolutely overwhelming, the level of response that we've gotten from audiences, and being able to show the film in person in a theater is just a completely different experience. So we've really relished that opportunity. And I think for audiences, it's really meaningful to be able to see this film and watch the story of Bitete, this young person doing these immensely courageous acts, and then to see him in person afterwards and be able to talk to him and understand more about his life. So it's just been really wonderful all around.
And I think I saw on his Twitter feed that the film actually was showing in Brazil.
Yeah, we had our Brazilian premiere as the closing night film of A Tudo Verdade, It's All True Festival in Brazil, and had a great audience. It's really interesting the ways that Brazilian audiences receive the film, in some ways similarly and in some ways differently from American audiences. But I've been really happy and pleased with the way that it's resonated with the people that we've been able to show it to in Brazil so far.
And do you know, now that this is out in the world and so many more people are going to become aware of these issues, are there more protections or do they face the same threats?
Bitete and the Uruguay face the same threats. They've only gotten worse. And this is an election year in Brazil. Bolsonaro is up for re-election October 2nd of 2022. And there's a real fear about any political instability that might come as a result of that election. You know, violence against groups like the Uruguay really tends to spike when there is this type of political instability and things can go sort of unnoticed in a worse way. So one of the things that the Uruguay have been calling for, we were in Copenhagen and recently in The Hague showing the film, and in meetings with ministers, foreign ministers, people there, Bitete has really been strongly calling for election monitors to be sent to Brazil in order to help quell any unrest that could come from that. Mm.
Alex Priss is director, cinematographer, and co-editor of The Territory. It'll be widely distributed in the fall, and then it'll eventually be on Disney+. Alex, huge thanks to you and your team for making this incredible documentary. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you, too. This is really lovely. Thank you.
And thank you for joining us. I'm Rose Aguilar. It's Your Call.